Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet. We talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc. I am Dan Selke. I am the editor of winnerscoming.net. And our usual co-host, Daniel Roman, is out for the foreseeable future because he and his wife are having a child. And that's going to take their attention for a minute. But while he's gone, we will have a rotating panel of expert genius guests drawn from the fields of pop culture, science, politics, including Aisha Hausa, who's also in the Phantom Network with me. Aisha, how you doing?
Good. I'm so excited to be here and get to guest co-host with you today.
I'm excited too. We're actually both in the Chicagoland area, you and I. So I'm much closer to you physically than I was to Daniel, who is in God only knows New York.
I know. Maybe, you know, one of the episodes we could do it live.
That would be fun.
In one place.
I would like that. And hello, everyone watching. Hello, Benjack. Hello, Julie. Hello, Ash. Anybody out there, feel free to comment. Feel free to, well, like and subscribe. Why not? Might as well do it. We love chatting with you. Love chatting with you. And we're going to get into it. I brought Aisha on because in a minute, we're going to deep dive on the third and final season of Squid Game, Netflix's hugely popular drama about poor people who fight to the death for money. But before we get to that, because you've seen that, I saw it, we both saw it early, we'll have lots of opinions about it, and it is enormously successful and popular, so it's worth talking about.
For sure.
But first, a quick stopover in Westeros to the latest goings-on in the Seven Kingdoms, because as always, there are goings-on. The first big bit of news out of Westeros is that we already knew that HBO had pushed the premiere of the new Game of Thrones prequel show, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, back. It was going to come out this year. Now it's going to come out next year, which is a shame. We heard this week they're doing reshoots, which I guess explains it. Reshoots, not an uncommon thing. A lot of shows do reshoots. It's pretty standard. I don't think there's any reason to worry, but I am upset that, because they were on this nice rhythm, Aisha, where it was like going to be, okay, season of House of the Dragon 1 year, and then a season of this new show the next year, and then season of House of the Dragon the next year, and then season of the other show the next year. It would be like at least one Game of Thrones thing a year. And now they've gone and screwed it up. Now it's the whole year without anything.
I know, yeah. You had one, like you said, one thing, you know, at least like guaranteed that you're going to watch, and now they just ruined it for Game of Thrones fans.
Boo. I hope it'll come out early next year, and hopefully it'll be as good as everyone says it is. Beyond that, they are filming the third season of House of the Dragon, and we've been getting quite a lot of images from the set. I guess they've given up on the idea of jealously guarding the location shoots, which I feel like studios were doing for a while. Like, no one can see anything. We have like 18 decoy actors in costumes running all over the place. We are going to shoot down drones on site with snipers. And I'm kind of happy that era has passed, because who cares? I don't know. It's always kind of my thought about it. If you see it, you see it. If the movie's good, it's good. Like, I don't really mind if I see things ahead of time if they leak. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing things like this. We're seeing things like this image taken by House the Dragons of a battle on the beach. That's the island of Driftmark, where the Valyrian house is located. We got soldiers from the Triarchy, pirates, wading through the surf, wanting to lay waste to Driftmark. And there's more. We can link the video in the chat if you want to see the full thing in motion. That's will be a big part of a big battle called the Battle of the Gullet coming next season, probably very early on. I'm sure it'll be fun and exciting and neat and all those good things. And check back on Winter's Coming if you want to see more behind the scenes images, because they are flowing pretty plentifully. The Shutterbug in Wales and England are nosy, dedicated, and well equipped.
Wow, that's crazy. I'm the type of fan who doesn't want things leaked. And, you know, as much as you try to filter that out on your social media feed, it'll still get in somehow. So I don't know, but I'm happy for you, I guess, to get all the leaks.
No, I do agree with you that if you don't want to see it and then it comes up, it is very annoying. I have had that experience. I guess speaking, I do ultimately believe that if the thing is good, it's going to be good, whether or not a thing leaks out ahead of time. Like if it's good, it'll last in posterity. The best things I think you should be good enough to want to watch them more than once, even after you've seen it, because that's how good they are. But yeah, I agree with you. I have been in a situation where I see, should I get specific and tell an anecdote?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I'm a big fan of a show called RuPaul's Drag Race, where a bunch of drag queens compete to be the best drag queen there is.
Yep.
Episodes air like Friday nights, and I can't always watch them on Friday nights. And there is this YouTuber, I won't name them because I don't want to start any drama or anything, but they get up these like recaps on YouTube so fast, and they just put images from the new episode in their thumbnails, and they're like who's in the finals or whatever. And I don't seek this out. I don't go looking for it, but the image just floats into my feed on YouTube sometimes. And it's like, now I know who's going to be in the final. Come on. And then I have to watch it like a couple days later. So, okay, I get it. It's annoying. I do think it should, a thing should stand up on its own at the end of the day. But I do want that YouTuber to be blocked from my feed. I don't know how to do that. If anyone knows how to block a YouTuber, tell me.
Okay, but to be fair, the episode is out by then. So I get that. I get the YouTuber's point of view. Like leaked images from a set and an actual episode that's already aired, that's two different things. So I feel like we always kind of like rationalize that with our, you know, when we're like doing our recaps and work and stuff, we're like, well, the episode's out. So if we spoil it for anyone, you know, it's on them. So I think, you know, can't be...
this big fat image of like the spoilery thing in it. You could just choose another image and just title your video something. It's That's not true. Bussy Queen Ben Jack. No, Bussy Queen's good. I like them. It's another person. We don't need to get into it. Very, very much tangent.
Yeah.
finally, I'll say that George R. R. Martin, progenitor of the Game of Thrones universe, author of Songs and Fire, Another Seven Kingdoms, Fire and Blood, yada, 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 is going to New York Comic Con in October. Which is significant because this is an author who usually cloisters himself in a room in Santa Fe and just writes things. And there's always an idiot part of me that thinks, oh, public appearance from George R. R. Martin. Does that mean it's going to make an announcement? Does that mean the Winter is done? That means it's going to finally reveal this book he's been writing for 14 years is finished. probably not, just knowing history, but worth saying out loud.
It's the heart of the fan. You're always hopeful. So even if you're let down.
He's apparently also going to be in a panel with Brandon Sanderson. Oh, at Worldcon. Oh, that's in Seattle. That's somewhere else. Okay, he's doing more appearances. You know what? Ugh, I can already... If it comes out that he has finished and that these... And this is like a victory tour, everyone will love him. If he doesn't announce it at these appearances... He will get dragged anew online, which is frankly another Tuesday. So whatever.
You know, he's got to do what he's got to do. So, you know, if he shows up for the fans, it's like, oh my God, great. If he doesn't, it's not great. So, you know, it is what it is. There's always going to be someone who doesn't like something.
God bless him. All right. And that is pretty much what is happening in the world of Game of Thrones. So Aisha, let's get to the meat of this episode, which is you and I discussing, evaluating, and bringing the hammer of judgment down upon the third and final season of Squid Game, the show where poor people kill each other for money. You probably heard of Squid Game, maybe even if you haven't seen it. It blew up like crazy in 2021, was it, on Netflix or two?
I want to say 2021. Yes, 2021.
Yeah, it was peak pandemic times. We were all home, unable to do anything. And this Korean language, kind of a battle royale-esque drama that no one had ever heard of, became a sensation. Everyone was talking about it. Yeah. There were parodies, Red Light, Green Light, but Deadly became a thing people were doing on YouTube videos. Mr. Beast picked it up and ripped it off and had an infringement thing about it. It was enormous. I loved it. I watched it at the time. I thought it was, I think Squid Game was one of the most intense shows I've ever watched. It's a very grip the side of your couch sort of series. Yes. I'm always on edge and nervous and afraid watching it. For a lot of reasons, because they come up with these ingeniously devilish games to put the contestants through. You know, you have to play red light, green light. But when every time you fail to stop when they say red light, you die. That kind of thing. And it just gets more and more intense as it goes on. And it really did work on me. Second season comes out only last December. And now here we are 6 months later. The third and final season has come out, bringing to an end the story of Ji-hoon, our main character, and seemingly wrapping up the series, but did it do a good job? I guess that's what we're here to discuss. So Aisha, just, I guess, gut reaction. Did you like watching the final six episodes of Squid Game on Netflix?
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Overall, I think the games like continued to be inventive and just like nail biting. Yeah. And, you know, in that jump rope game, like we knew that 4, 5, 6 was going to survive, even though he's holding this baby. But like my heart was still stopping every time he was losing balance. So I think it did have that factor. My thing with season 2 and 3, and I don't know if everyone else feels like this, and honestly, season 1 came back and, you know, came out in 2021. So right. I feel like I need to go rewatch it. But I just felt like there was a lot of dialogue instead of more action in seasons 2 and 3. And like, to be honest, it got a little boring at times, especially the final game when they're all like discussing and trying to have this democracy and like voting who they're going to push off and stuff. I don't know. It just felt very long and kind of repetitive to me. So those are kind of like my initial reactions. The ending, I think all of us didn't want it, but I was kind of expecting it. I feel like he was kind of always destined to sacrifice himself and prove to the front man that he's different. I don't know. I feel like I saw that coming, but I think that, you know, we like to watch shows to not think of reality and just, we want some sort of happy ending, but like life isn't always like that. And, you know, the creator was trying to portray that. So I think it's fair for the message he wanted to send. Mm-hmm. And I think we were supposed to leave a little frustrated because life is frustrating. And sometimes, you know, the big guys win and you might win a small battle like they did, which is end the games in Korea. He did confirm that, you know, now they're over in Korea because the government finally is aware of them. But they're still happening, you know, around the world and the ending. And I'm jumping around a little too much. But those were like those are my initial reactions to it.
I hear you. And Mr. Vicky asked, did we like it? I think we both liked it. I think I might have liked it more than you, because I'll say this, your first point. I do not agree there was too much dialogue. The second season, kind of yes. My opinion on Squid Game is whenever it isn't focused on the players in the arena playing deadly children's games for money and their own lives, I got less interested. So that second season, like the first two episodes, it was Ji-hun 456 trying to find the Squid Games. I just wasn't as compelled. Once they started, I was way more into it. And I will say this third season, I don't think it really slackened in terms of making me dry heave in terror. Like that first episode, it's leading up to the keys and knives game. And I was, because I know people can die. So I'm always on the edge of my seat being like, oh God, who's going to be? That second episode where they're in the maze, like the low ceilinged, starry walled maze. That might have been the best episode of the season. It was so claustrophobic the whole way through. And characters I did like a lot did die. I was gripping the entire time. I feel like they did not give me a break, because the next one, we got into Jump Rope, which is also horrifying, which is just they're on this really thin bridge where a giant metal jump rope is going around. If you fall off, you die. And many people fell off. And I knew that Ji-hun would make it. Yeah, he's the only one who has plot armor. Even the other ones, though, this is a show where I'm like screaming at my TV. I'm like saying, go back, jump. No, do that. Even the ones I don't like, the characters, like I was still nervous because I'm about to see somebody fall off the edge and face plant and die. And then I really liked the third game, the Towers game.
Okay,
I thought all three of them were very distinctive, very inventive. And part of the fun is it's hard to predict them. It's hard to predict in what way they're going to be brutally violent. And I enjoyed the discussions there. He was making a point. I think the guy who made it, whose name escapes me, is very cynical about the world.
333.
The creator of the show.
Oh, the front man?
No, like the creator of Squid Game, the show.
Oh,
like the real guy in our world.
Yes. Okay.
He's a cynical guy. He's talked about how he.
I know his name. I just don't want to butcher the pronunciation. So I'm not gonna.
That is exactly where I am. His first name is Huang.
Yes.
He's talked about how he's looked at the world these past few years and he's seen income inequality grow at a huge rate. He's seen democratic societies get threatened. Here in the US, we're going through a bit of a threat ourselves. And so that last game where all the remaining people, who are all a bunch of assholes, by the way, like no one nice survived except Ji-hun.
Right.
They're all kind of talking amongst themselves. Who should we kill to advance? And they all vote on it. And the point, I think, is that, you think democracy is so good? What if a bunch of jerks just get together and then vote to do something bad and then use the fact that there was a vote as a justification for brutality? And I got it. I got the point.
Yeah.
I was actually impressed by how quickly all of those characters at the very end, who we didn't really know very well, except for 333 and Ji-hun and that number 100 guy who I hated the entire season, wanted him to die every single episode. He never did.
I know. I was waiting. I was like, he needs to die.
He needs to die so bad. but I was impressed that I thought a lot of them like kind of emerged very quickly as distinct personalities. I couldn't tell you their names, but I knew that there was like the guy who was really kind of quick to violence. There was the shorter, kind of more rotund guy who was clearly just kind of maybe the weakest link, and he just wanted to be with the rest of the bullies to protect himself, and he couldn't. At the end, they beat him up. I thought the dynamics developed very quickly. There's something about like these really high stake situations where character comes out really fast. And I thought that worked for me in the final game.
Okay. No, I think that's what's unique about Squid Game is, like you said, it's, you know, you're just in these very high intense, you know, so much at stake situations that you see the characters in. So like you said, we can really get to the root of those characteristics, you know, sometimes in like dramas and stuff like that, you know, it's like there's character development and, you know, maybe like characters don't show their true colors at first, whatever. There's no time for that here. Like it's either this, you're this or whatever your personality trait is. I think I'm still emotionally recovering from episode two. Like I was literally like this wild. The whole time. I was like, okay, like they showed us this one twist, like it's over. And then another one came and another one came. And I was just like, it was just crazy, crazy. I think that one was my favorite too.
I thought it was almost too much. Like, okay. So Mr. Vicky has an interesting comment. They say, I would like to say one thing this season was not up to the mark. They added so much useless stuff, which wasn't needed. And the things which were actually needed, they ignored them. Now, I'm not sure exactly what you mean, Mr. Vicky, of what was useless and what's not. I'd love to know. Let us know what you thought was useless and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to delineate what is needed in a show like this, because I feel like it's different things to different people. Like I saw people complaining that there was no resolution between the two brothers, like Junho, the detective, and the front man.
Yes.
I know it valid. I'll be like, my perspective on that usually was, I don't care about either of them.
Like, really? I love
this. Yes. I'm not lying. Whenever it went away from the players in the arena, my interest always went like this. It was like,
yeah. No,
and
I get
like, okay, when are they back to the actual arena? And then I would perk up again. I thought it was better this season because I didn't like the front man being part of the games because I was like, okay, he's going to live. So what are we doing here? Come on. But really? this time he was less involved, which I liked.
Yeah.
And they didn't end up having a conversation. I don't think it was useless though. Okay, let's get into, I have a theory of sort of the meaning of the ending and Jihan's sacrifice.
Okay, that's good.
You want to hear my theory?
Okay.
So in the end, the final two players are Jihan, number 456, and a literal baby who has been put into the games because the sick folk who watch this are sick folk and they do that kind of thing. So Jihan can kill the baby and live and get a lot of money, or he can die and let the baby live. He dies. He falls off the tower voluntarily, as I knew he would. There's one good person in that last group, and it was him.
Right.
I'm really glad I didn't go that cynical. And I liked how his act of goodness sort of rippled out a little bit. So, yes, the Squid Games are all over the world. The billionaires, who were the worst part of the season to me, by the way, the VIPs, we'll talk about them in a second.
Yeah.
They all got away. You're right. It was a small victory. So this one South Korean Squid Games was toppled. They can't do that again, at least not in that location. But worldwide, the very rich are still stomping on the necks of the very poor. Mm-hmm. But in Jihoon's sacrifice, I thought it had some positive effects. Like the front man seemed affected. I'm not sure he had to do what he did, which was give Jihoon's winnings to his daughter. He made sure that the baby would be well taken care of because his brother's a good guy. So maybe they didn't like actually meet and, I don't know, hash out their issues.
Yeah.
But it felt like the front man's heart grew, if not three sizes that day, then at least like a size and a half. And I think it's because of his sacrifice. Noelle, the rebel guard from North Korea, she was going to unalive herself, as they say online. Mm-hmm. And then when she saw what Jihoon did, she didn't. Mm-hmm. And that kind of saved her life. I thought the point of it was that, according to the creator of Squid Game, the world is an oppressive place run by corrupt, heartless billionaires who control everything. But Jihoon's act was this. It wasn't completely hopeless, because Jihoon's act did inspire a couple other people to do a little bit of good. So that was kind of what leavened it for me. I don't see it as a purely cynical ending. I see it as a quite cynical ending that leaves some room for optimism.
I agree. Yeah, and I think that was basically the whole point, like what you said. I'm not going to repeat it because you phrased it so well. But basically, yeah, like there's always hope, I think, is like It's a mix of cynical and hope. It's crazy. But, you know, I think that's what our world is and what our realities are. So, sure. Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I like the detective. I liked the front man in season two. I don't know if you want to go back to that, but I feel like I just have to like defend them a little bit because I don't know. I thought it was such an interesting twist, and like it showed that 456 is so trusting that he didn't feel like something was off, even though it's the literal front man there. I don't know. It just made things really interesting. And just because we were in the know as viewers of like who this guy is. But I will say I still found it really intriguing, but I will say that's why player one in the first season was so crazy and such a good twist, the old man, because we didn't know who he actually was.
Totally.
So again, you know, it's hard to compare, I feel like, seasons two and three to season one. I think no matter what, that's just going to be the best season. And, you know, to be fair, the creator only wanted to do one season. And, you know, Netflix saw it was really big and they asked him for more. And, you know, was that the best decision? I don't know. I mean, clearly the numbers are doing great for them.
For Netflix, yes.
Yes. I don't blame Netflix for wanting more. But as a vision, he had it as one season. So if there's something, I guess, that we didn't completely agree with or completely want, you know, he had to come up with a story. So, yeah, I don't know.
Ask you a question. Do you believe he only had a vision for one season? Because I remember him saying that and thinking, like, season one ends with Ji-hun about to get an airplane, his hair dyed red as the sunrise, and then like saying, like, you know what, I'm going to hunt you down, and walking off purposefully. That is not a vision for a one season ending. Okay, I don't know if I believe him, to be honest.
This is what I want clarification on. Did he write that because Netflix had already asked him
maybe
to
that's
do
true.
More?
That's possible, yeah.
Or was that always his ending? Because then, yeah, it's like, you know, don't blame it all on Netflix. I don't know. So, you know, if we ever get a chance to interview him, that's a question I would like to know. An answer.
The man whose name we are afraid to pronounce.
Yeah.
Mr. Vicky is bringing up stuff. He says that Ji-hun could have used his money to build an army, which, by the way, he kind of did. Like, I want to say this. Like, yes, the winnings, I did like the translations. It's like $37 million, like $40 million. It's a lot of money. Like, you'll never have to work again. It's not like buy an army money. Like, he did hire mercenaries to go out and look for things. Mm-hmm. He stayed in a motel or whatever. I think the Squid Game folk were clever. They didn't like make him a billionaire enough to buy a country and influence policy. They gave him enough money to live incredibly comfortably for the rest of his days. But I think what he did with the money was about what he could do with the money. So I don't think that's a plot hole.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. If he won it twice, I mean, okay, he can buy some more.
Right.
yeah. Well, anyway.
Oh,
yeah, I enjoyed all of that. That second episode, I thought it was almost too much because the second season, I was a little annoyed. And by the way, I see seasons two and three as one big season. I think it's pretty clear now that it's over.
Mm-hmm.
This was season one, and then season two split into two parts.
Yeah.
Was very much a thing. I was upset that not more people were dying in season two because part of the appeal of the show to me is that white knuckle effect, is that it is incredibly tense to watch when people are in real danger. They made up for lost time here. They killed a lot of people. And then I wanted to be more nice and not kill as many. So I guess I can't be pleased. that second episode when the transgender woman died, Jim Zha was her name. I forget what her name is. Hyunju. That was like a great moment. And I almost wish like they had just kept that and then not also killed young Seek, because it was like, it's too much. I can't absorb all this at once.
Yeah.
My favorite character was Zhem Zha, the older woman, the grandmother.
Yeah,
I loved her. She was great. She was the voice of reason. She was the voice of humanity. I welled up multiple times during her speeches. I really wanted her to survive at least a bit longer or even all the way to the end. So, of course, she dies in a kind of not anticlimactic, but not terribly dramatic way. Oh, that was upsetting.
Did you see that twist coming of her?
In retrospect, I think yes, because she had that conversation with Ji-hun about you need to take care of the baby. I've lived long enough. It does seem like it was setting it up. And she had just kind of doomed her son. Like, I get it. She's in a place. But honestly, no, I didn't see it coming until it happened. And then I was like, oh, okay.
And with the pin, emergencies too. I was like, oh, my heart. I couldn't take it. But just going back to player 120 for a second, I mean, she literally made it to the congratulations door. That was just, she deserved better. Oh, that was, I can't.
I mean, it's this thing of you introduce these really likable characters. I don't know, knowing you're going to brutally kill most of them. And is that a selling point or is that a demerit? It kind of seems to depend on the instance.
I just thought, like, I get it, but I just thought at least one of them from those like good characters would.
Yeah, right. Like finals. Somebody.
You know, I feel like, I don't know how many they were, like six of the bad guys and then four, five, six and the baby. Like, I don't know. It was a bit of a weird split for me. I have so many mixed thoughts. It's been a few days. I actually watched the screeners beforehand, you know, to recap and do all the work that we do for it. So it's sat with me for a while now, but I can't come to one conclusion. Like, did I really like it? Did I really hate it? Am I somewhere in the middle? I feel like it's a little bit of both. I don't know. There's like good things and bad things about it, I guess.
I think it is a decently layered story. Like, I don't even think people should aim to, like, I don't know, please the audience utterly and completely. A, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. And B, I don't know, if you have something complicated to say, and to the show's credit, I do think it has something it genuinely wants to say, which is not a guarantee when you make TV or movies. There are a lot of movies or TV shows out there that are just, I don't know, made because they got to make something and loaded up with crowd-pleasing stuff. I like that this show actually did try to say something. And I think it should be respected for that. Mm-hmm. I think the ambivalence, while it isn't always a sign of a well-made show, in this case, I do think is inspiring the kind of discussion it wanted to inspire, which is about how optimistic should we be in a world that has these kind of problems. I feel like it did make me think somewhat and also make me get the side of my couch until my knuckles turned white. So I liked it. Overall, I did like this. By the way, and Mr. Mickey had one comment we didn't read that he wanted us to. I think imagine if Dora the Explorer, which I think he means the detective, Jinho, made it there in time with an army during the last game and there is a huge fight between everyone and 001 starts supporting Ji-hun. What an epic moment. See, that would be cool. I do want to say, I feel like criticisms that if you criticize a show or a movie and the criticism is, what if something completely different happened? That's not really a criticism, like on the merits. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love your comment, by the way. Please keep commenting. But I feel like I'm always a fan of like criticizing what's there, not like the other thing you wish this thing was, but isn't. Like, how well did it do what it set out to do? And if this story was about having a kind of a pessimistic thrill ride with a sprinkle of hope about our world, I think it did a good job. It could use a bit more hope, though. I agree. I wish someone had lived. I do. I wish someone had made it out other than
technically one did. The father of the girl at the carnival.
But we didn't know them at all.
I know. That was a bit of a interest. I feel like the creator wanted to bring back that element of like, okay, the first season we had the pink guards and what they're doing, the organ trafficking ring and the games. So I feel like they were trying to do that again. And that's why they introduced Noel, I think. Sorry if I'm saying that wrong.
And I kept saying Noel, like it's French. It's kind of spelled like that, but that's why I remembered it.
Sorry about the pronunciation, guys. But so I get that, but I don't know, overall, and you know, he was a great character, but like you said, he wasn't like one of the main ones. So I feel like they could have maybe, you know, used a different character and a connection there. Thing with the detective and the front man storyline is just that, you know, for two seasons, all he really did was get on this boat and look for the island, like every episode. And then, you know, finally, eventually he learns about Captain Park, but that took a while. And it just felt like it was building to something more and then it didn't. So I think that's where I think as a fan and like viewers were a little frustrated with that. I know we were just talking about, you know, maybe focus on what is there instead of what isn't there, but like that needed to be in there. You know, it was missing. Yeah. It was missing something. And, you know, it didn't need to be a whole, you know, talk or whatever, even though I think that they definitely need to hash things out. They have issues, but at least something other than him calling his name, him turning around with the baby, turning back around like he's not going to shoot me, and then goes back down the elevator dramatically. Like it just, it built, it kept building and building, and it felt like there was no reason to it, I guess. And as much as it hurts me to say that, there was no reason for the detective in seasons 2 and 3. I mean, other than Ji-hun, you know, at the beginning, but do you know what I mean? Like it just,
I totally know what you mean. Yeah. It was a sort of elliptical plot. He does raise the baby. I mean, to be honest, I remember in season 2, my thought was, I wish the detective had just stayed dead after the first season. That would have been, that made more sense to me.
Yeah. Like, but I think they needed that little tiny bit of humanity that's left in the front man. They needed to like, have a way to show that, I guess.
They probably could have got through another way. Like Noelle could have been the person on the inside this time or something like that. And she could have raised the baby. I don't know. Now I'm rewriting it in my head.
We're doing what we told Mr. Vicky not to do. So,
which I do enjoy. I love that exercise. I think it's okay when I do it, but it's not okay when anybody else does. And I think that's the line I'll draw. No, I could get into that, but I don't think we need to. JP says, very disappointing in season 2 and season 3 for me. They split into 2 seasons, but still felt nothing happened. Felt like a different show compared to season 1. Yeah, people, there has been a backlash to it. People have criticized it. It's definitely not perfect. I think it will blow over because I did have a good time watching it. I mean, you can check my armrests on my couch. They will show you how good a time I had. I was very, very thrilled. And I did think the ending had a good point. But I do get it. I do get that there were things that seemed to set up and not go anywhere. I would have done differently. But, you know, I didn't write it. And the creator should talk to us. And we can talk to him about things. And we could ask him all the questions. Mr. Hwang Dong-hyuk. Let me ask you this question. What did you think about Kate Blanchett showing up at the end?
That was like really crazy. It was really awesome to see someone notable, I guess. And you're, you know, totally unexpected. And you're just like, oh my God, what is she doing? I did see some people pointing out why, you know, if it's supposed to be taking place in America, why are they playing
again? I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
I know. Sorry, guys. Instead of like an American game, but I think, you know, visually we just needed to quickly understand, you know, what they were doing. So
yeah,
I get that aspect of it, I guess. But
also it's not that hard to pick up. Like I thought about that too, but look, if you'd never played that before, you throw some paper on the ground, put it on a piece of paper. I'm confident anybody could get it.
I mean, I feel like if someone showed up like that in a suit and they were playing some game, once you see the slap, you'll know what they're doing. And she just went for it. Like
she did.
I hope that
Galadriel's going to screw you up. Yeah, in the face.
I don't know how real that slap was, but it looked very realistic. What did you think?
Okay, I did like 2 double takes in that last scene. As the front man sees Kate Blanchett recruiting some guy, some LA native of the Squid Games. And by the way, I like the details in that scene. Like, there's like a tent in the background, so that guy is probably homeless. Mm-hmm. So they're doing this all over the place. Mm-hmm. I was like, is that Kate Blanchett? No, it can't be. And then they showed it again, like, it's Kate Blanchett. And then finally in like close up, I'm like, that's definitely Kate Blanchett. Why is Kate Blanchett here?
Yeah.
Kind of weird, kind of surreal. I guess. Yeah, kind of weird and surreal. It's sort of like she was compelling. She had one line, as you wish, and she mm-hmm. was charismatic because she's Kate Blanchett. I guess a little distracting and a little strange. Okay. Some people thought it's like to set up the American Squid Game. The creator says it is not. I believe him because his larger point is that this goes on. Whether it's setting it up or not, I'm not sure you needed a giant star in the role. Mm. But what a curious little way to end it. I was, it made me, gave my brain a jolt.
You know what? I feel like, you know, TV shows will kind of do that. Like, it's a very Hollywood sort of thing. I'm not saying it's necessarily bad, but yeah, I feel like, especially with the final season, final scene sort of thing, you want something else for people to keep talking about, and people are definitely talking about that. So
good job.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's how it, I think we glossed over this, but really quickly, what did you think of the inclusion of the baby? I thought that added another, like, a new element of, like, because we saw how ruthless people can be in the games, but that just added another layer to it, because, like, this poor innocent baby, and then you know there's people, including its father, that are willing to sacrifice. Oh
God, that guy! What a turd for the end. Yeah, he was a jag. He was coming apart at the seams toward the end. He was an interesting character because he was so utilitarian. He was always like, "I'll do exactly what is mathematically best for me, and if that includes killing my baby, I'll do it." Although I think he was cracking up towards the end. The baby made the show feel more symbolic to me because it can't really be a character, right? It's a baby.
Yeah.
And by the way, a very well-behaved baby, like, barely cried at all.
Right.
Like, it was only a few days old, but there was no scenes of it being colicky and waking everybody up. And
I just want to say, baby's an unserious moment for me. I just couldn't help but laugh is when the pink guard was feeding the baby the bottle. I don't know why that just felt so funny in a, like, in this crazy world. It just, I don't know. That cracked me up.
It made things feel I want to say symbolic and heightened, because, like, okay, this baby isn't a character. This baby is innocence.
Yeah.
And they were protecting, and I got it, and it worked, but it was like a more overtly emotional kind of, like, mythic element to it, which I liked. I thought it was fine. Yeah. Again, sort of like Kate Blanchett, though, a little strange to have the baby in the mix. And again, like, the quietest baby in the history of babies. But overall, I enjoyed it. Oh, before we end, I have to talk about the VIPs were terrible.
The what? Oh, the VIPs. Yeah.
They were
very cringy.
Very cringy.
Like I don't know what specifically. I think it was just them overall. Like,
it was the line readings. Like, I don't know what it was, but the acting of the VIP people, the billionaires, was just several rungs below everyone else.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a translation issue, because it was noticeable.
No, like, I agree. Yeah. Like, everyone is way up here in the acting. And then, like, even Kate Blanchett with her, like,
yeah, she 30 was great.
Second scene and saying one line. But yeah, it was very cringy to watch. I was just like, it took me away from the, you know, because they're playing the games and the jump rope and whatever. And then, like, we go to the VIPs, and it just, like, cut the tension for me.
Yes, completely.
Yeah.
I remember it was the episode where Zhemzha, the old lady, like, makes her really emotional appeal to everybody to leave, and I cried. And then her really emotional talk with Ji-hun about getting the baby, and I cried. And then the VIPs are there being like, you look prettier when your mouth is closed. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
This is horrible. I'm going to assume it was some, it felt like, because the creator is not a native English speaker. So it felt like, I don't know, like their dialogue was put through Google Translate or something. And like the wasn't used to working with English speaking actors. I'm completely speculating here, but it was noticeably weird, which is a shame.
It was, but you think with the resources of Netflix, like, I mean, they have a translator everywhere they go. So I feel like it could have been translated very, you know, effectively. I'm sorry. I think it was maybe part of it was that. I think part of it was also just the actors. The VIPs were cringy in season one, but I don't know. These were just.
I don't recall it being like this, though.
It was not like this.
And it's a shame because they are an important part of the bigger message. Like, if the message is that the world is controlled by callous billionaires and we should be, frightened and of them. Those like people were not convincing me of that.
Yeah, I would not be afraid of them. So,
and you're like dime store Party City Eyes Wide Shut masks watching this. No, I did not like that part. That was a shame.
Yeah,
but no. That's about it. It was almost so bad it was good territory. Honestly, it was approaching that, but
yeah,
can't have it all. No. Overall, though, I enjoyed the series, and like Mr. Vicky says, I would watch a. I probably would watch an English language version, whether it's completely divorced from the original story or whether it is tied in with like Ji-hoon's daughter somehow ending up in the games. I don't know how they would swing that, but
what if she's a VIP now because she has all the money?
Oh, that's like $10 million. It's not going to make you a VIP. They got to be billionaires. Like Jeff Bezos
and everything. She's not going to be left with much.
Do you think they tax the game money? I wondered that.
Do they have to
launder this?
I don't know.
Or do you have to report this and like run it through your like nail business and like, oh, I made $40 million last year. Like, did you? No but audit.
It was in cash. Never mind. Because it's like in the bank. But I mean, I don't know. South Korea has a comprehensive tax system, which includes national and local taxes. So, but this is supposed to run under the radar. It would be pretty suspicious if every year these, like, I don't know if the government would really notice that, like, out of nowhere, it's like the same exact amount every time.
Maybe. Some of the VIPs are incredibly powerful banking CEOs and they pull some strings. I don't know.
You know, I think we're starting to, you know, get into the threads of it a little too much there.
Might be a good time to move on.
Okay.
This was fun. I'm glad we got to hash this out because and get some of the thoughts out. Aisha, anybody out there, you watching anything else these days? TV, movies, books?
Yeah. So I'm a huge Abbott Elementary. So, you know, sorry, cool. Not sci-fi, you know, world here. We're going a little in a different direction, but I love Abbott Elementary and I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So earlier this year, Abbott had the first sort of half of the crossover episode between the two shows. Mm-hmm. On ABC, and on July 9th, which is really, really soon, It's Always Sunny is going to air the second half. So I got the screener for that. Can't talk about it.
Nice.
But I really enjoyed it. It was really funny. And if you guys watch the Abbott one, never watch Sunny, it's just get ready for a bit of another crazy ride. And they're a little more unhinged than you would think. So if you're not familiar with them. So it's supposed to be like unseen footage from the day or whatever. Because in Abbott, there's a documentary crew who follows the teachers and staff around. So this is kind of like unseen footage. It is crazy. And that was really, really fun for me. And then, I don't know, I've been rewatching Stranger Things.
Sure.
We don't need to get into the whole 3-part release thing. I have, thoughts on that. That's a different discussion. But I don't know. I've just been rewatching it again. And, you know, with it coming in a few months, maybe we'll catch some like Easter eggs or something that they've been building up to for the final season.
We'd better. I assume they have laid down some groundwork and will provide some things, some fun bits for the fans. But we'll get to that in a couple of months. Like you said, it's almost here. Spooky.
Yep. Are you watching anything?
I have I'll just say it now because it's out tomorrow. I've gotten to see all the episodes of The Sandman on Netflix, which drops tomorrow, which I really liked. I like that show. I like that comic series. I'm sorry the second season is going to be the last one. I think it was going to be longer originally, but I think they did a good job of condensing things and driving towards the end of the story. So I'll talk about that next week, most likely. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I think it's That's good. Again, like this very, not demented, it's kind of emotionally driven, trippy, surreal in a good way, sort of fantasy show. I like that show a lot. And I agree with Mr. Vicky completely. Imagine Lady Olenna, Tywin, Marjorie, Cersei as VIPs. That would have been great. Cersei Lannister as a VIP at Squid Game. She would have been great. She would have looked down with a cold and merciless glance as everybody fell to their death, cracked like the tiniest little corner smile. And it would have said more than every line in Squid Game season 3 would have. I don't think Tywin would have time for that, but Cersei would have loved it.
That would have been epic for sure.
Get Lena Headey. Don't hire... We can't go over this too much. It's fine. It's past. If they have an American version, you know what
There's
not to do.
Opportunities there.
All right, Aisha, do you want to do your first ever WIC News lightning round where we go through a bunch of stories we didn't get to the name of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them, no more, no less?
Yes, I'm scared, but I'm ready.
I think you're going to do awesome. And if you don't, here's the secret. It doesn't matter at all.
Okay.
So here we go. I'll start by asking you a question. A pretty big breaking news story from last week. Aisha, Denis Villeneuve, director of the Dune movies, is going to direct the next James Bond movie. Your thoughts?
I think he's an interesting choice, but a good one. You know, he's done more like psychological crime thrillers than a spy thriller, you know, specifically sort of genre. But, you know, I feel like Blade Runner, the sequel, and then the Dune
Sicario.
Movie. Oh, wow. That 20 seconds goes by really fast.
It goes by faster than you think it would. You get used to
it.
Oh,
my gosh. I did. Wow. Okay. I'm not going to be so chatty. I'm a chatty person. Okay. Gotta stop. Anyway, good choice.
Cool.
That's the end of that. Okay. So speaking of, for that movie, they want a younger star, maybe like Tom Holland, Harris Dickinson, Jacob Elordi. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's fine. I think that would be, I think James Bond's usually a bit of like a middle-aged or 30-something or like 40-something guy. Why not, I guess? I don't see anything horribly oppositional about it. I mean, Tom Holland in everything seems like a bit of overkill. I think they should do it with Pedro Pascal. I feel like he needs the work and I would watch that.
Ooh, okay. Ooh, you were much closer than me, but you know, you've had longer practice. So,
oh yeah, I've got this down to a science.
Okay.
Okay. Aisha, are you interested in this new movie for which a trailer came out called Project Hail Mary? Ryan Gosling stars as a middle school teacher sent into space to figure out why the sun is dying. Appealing?
No? Story-wise, sure. Ryan Gosling, that's probably a while I'll watch. That's that for me. But it is going to be cool to see him. It's a bit of a different genre. We haven't really seen him in like a space save the world sort of film. So I think that'll be really cool. Okay. So Australian actor Javier.
Go ahead and try.
I should have looked up how to pronounce his name beforehand. I'm so bad. Molyneux.
Thank your guess. Why not?
I don't even want to try. He has landed the lead role in the new Vikings series, Blood Axe. Do you think he was the choice?
I don't know. But the big news here, I think, is that there is a new Vikings series. Vikings was this big popular thing. 2010s, they had Vikings Valhalla on Netflix. I thought they'd be kind of done, but there is a new Viking series, historical fiction. I've never heard of Blood Axe. Apparently he was a real guy and he did Viking stuff in Europe at that point of time. Sure. Rock on, Xavier Molyneux. Ooh, I should have had this one for myself. I'm not sure if you're a fan of the show, but whatever. I'll ask and see what happens. Aisha, the producer of the AMC horror drama, which I love, Interview with the Vampire, wants four or five Anne Rice shows on at once. Good idea, bad idea?
Love his enthusiasm, but that's pretty ambitious. Maybe if you were Netflix, no offense to AMC. I think they've done, you know, pretty good with the Anne Rice shows, but that's a lot. It's a lot for fans to keep up with, too.
It sounds hubristic, doesn't it? Like you're setting it up for a fall.
Yes. So Silo season 4 is about to film. Are you excited? Are you, you know, it's a good sign for the, you know, release window, whatever that'll be for the new season.
Yeah, I have not actually watched Silo. Daniel loves it. Sci-fi show on Apple TV Plus.
Okay.
But I really love the fact that Apple has enough foresight to film season 3, not out yet, season 4 right after that. Mm-hmm. And they're going to come like pretty close then. I'm tired of waiting 2 years between things. I'm happy someone is thinking ahead and doing things like back to back to back.
I agree. It's 2 years is too much.
I completely agree. What do we think about this? Warner Bros. Discovery, after like literally decades in the making, has abandoned plans to make a live action adaptation of the classic anime film Akira.
Thoughts? I don't really know the anime world, so no. I don't have many thoughts. I'm assuming it's not easy to adapt. So is that where things went wrong? But I'm not an expert in that.
Hey, if you ever want to watch Akira, it's a trip. It's endured. I would watch it. It's famously development hell kind of movie. I hope one day it'll happen. Huh. And then, wait, who is the last one? You to me.
Okay. My turn. Don't take my turn, Dan.
Okay.
Last question for you. Okay. In the lightning round, Last of Us co-showrunner Neil Druckmann. I'm so bad with these pronunciations today. He has left the show ahead of season 3, and a new showrunner is stepping in. Thoughts on that?
It's actually, so there are two showrunners, Druckmann and Craig Mazin. So Druckmann's leaving and Mazin's going to keep doing it himself solo. Neil Druckmann made The Last of Us video games. So him stepping back, it could mean something. It could mean nothing. I'm cool with it. Craig Mazin made Chernobyl. That was really, really good. The Last of Us is at a bit of a crossroads. We'll see in 2 years again. We made a decision then. All right, Aisha, thanks for coming on. Thank you. This was fun. Do you want to come back sometime the next 2 months when Daniel is gone?
Maybe. No, I'm kidding. Yes, I had a blast. No, I had a blast. It was really, really fun. I hope I did well in my first lightning round, though.
I think you did perfect. Look, okay. I've been in it for literal years, and I talk over and go way under all the time. Ask the commenters. They'll tell you.
I have too many words. So, you know, got to learn to. Yeah. That's why podcasts are amazing. But no, I would definitely love to come back. Thank you for having me.
Cool. The plan, guys, is to have some new hosts come in week by week. Maybe some will stick around for a while. Maybe we'll have a new one every week. Maybe we'll have a new permanent one until Daniel gets back. We're still figuring that part out. But I'm looking forward to figuring it out with all of you. And as you wait for our next show, Benj, I think you crushed it. Good job, Aisha. Why don't you go ahead and like and subscribe? You already left a comment, so you got that part down. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell people in elevators you stand next to, strangers. And we download some podcasts from wherever podcasts are available. Aisha, thank you so much. Thank you all for watching. We stream every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST. Victor, I'm sorry you just got here, but you can join us then, and we'll see you at that point in time. Goodbye.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.